A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, car, what else? Cars.
Cars.
Oh, yeah. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode.
I think we just got to dive straight in with my Bugatti experience.
Oh yeah.
Because that video went live.
Yeah, but it was white, the car.
Is that a bad thing?
Yeah.
Really?
It's all right if it's in Dubai, but I wouldn't have a white one. Would you?
I actually think it looked pretty good. No, I mean, I wouldn't spec a white one. Would I have one? For sure. I wouldn't care. I mean, I take one in poo brown. In fact, I spec'd one in poo brown on the configurator.
Did you?
Yeah. I'm very happy with the poo brown car. I mean, I would literally have a Bugatti in any color.
Okay.
It didn't matter. And it did look good in the sunshine. It had the tan interior. It did kind of suit the car, I suppose. But yeah, I had this incredible experience, which we spoke about briefly in last week's episode before I went.
Well, we had an argument.
Well, we did have an argument. That's pretty standard for us. I guess we can pick up on that argument slightly and discuss a little further as to whether now that I've driven the Chiron Supersport and had my Bugatti experience, whether I would still choose a Chiron over a LAF. But in general, I just kind of want to share a little bit more the behind the scenes of that experience.
Fair enough.
How it all went. And actually, before we get into the Bugatti stuff, when I arrived into Frankfurt, the airport we flew into, and then had to transfer over to Molsheim, France, because it's in the middle of nowhere, I was picked up from the airport in a Mercedes EQA.
Right.
A little electric GLA, I guess.
Yeah.
Do they claim that that's built from the ground up, the EQA? I'm sure they...
I don't know, mate. I mean, do they actually build everything for... I mean, I would say all these electric cars, Mercedes... They've probably got similar platforms and similar, and yeah, they just build from them.
Because,
I mean,
like BMW iX, you can tell, ground up. That's a whole new thing. And yeah. Taycan, ground up. But yeah, I was in that EQA thinking, is this just a GLA that's slightly... Well, I should do some research and find out.
Yeah.
It wasn't the cars there to review, so I didn't do any research. But I did keep a very close track on the range, because as we got into this car, I looked over at the guy's wage and it said 2 hours and 20 minutes to the hotel. Firstly, I was like, oh, poor off. Definitely didn't want to see that on the estimate. But I was like, that's a considerable journey to be doing in an electric vehicle. So I then immediately checked the charge level and the range. He had charged the driver, had charged up to 100%, and the range was, I don't know, 347 kilometers, something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Which is 200 miles-ish.
A little bit more, 225 miles, something like that. And I think to the hotel was 290 kilometers. So, you know, theoretically plenty of range and things like that. But given my prior experiences, I was a little apprehensive. And the last thing I wanted is to add on to that two-hour journey with
it. Isn't it amazing that you've got in a car technically full up with fuel or electric and you're flapping that you're actually going to get to that destination? I mean, that just don't happen in a combustion car.
Well, the reason I was flapping is because, well, we were in Germany, so we're going to be going on the Autobahn.
Yeah.
There were three of us in the car.
Yeah.
A couple of us were plugged phones into charge. Actually, there were four of us with the driver. We're loaded up with luggage. So all these, I had a little bit of aircon on. So all these things that actually usually do impact on, electric range.
Drain.
Drains the battery. And so, yeah, you're right. Obviously, if you're in a combustion engine car, you just think, well, worst case scenario, we're going to have to fill up with fuel. I guess the worst case scenario here is he was going to have to pull over and charge. But yeah, long day of traveling, it was the last thing we all wanted and we'd been delayed and I won't bore you with it. Anyway, long story short, EQA performed fantastically. Mm. Got us there with 37% of the battery charge still remaining. About 90 kilometers, I think, still on the range, something like that. I suspect the ball ache for the driver was that he would have had to have driven to the airport, charged, and then come and met us.
Correct.
But the other thing I'd say is we did drive very slowly.
Well, I'm glad you've mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because I've got a little bit of a bugbear with electric car drivers in general. They do drive really slowly.
For a reason.
Yeah. So
to maximise that range.
To maximise the range, yeah. Like, when I say really slowly, they don't even drive the speed limit. So I was behind a Tesla yesterday in a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit, and he was doing maximum 40-mile-an-hour.
Yeah, I think the worst for sure is out on the motorway, right?
Yeah. It's,
you know, so have you ever been on the Autobahn going slowly?
No.
Terrifying. Actually terrifying. I mean, you know, it's intense enough if you're going at the sort of right kind of speed, but then, yeah, I mean, we had cars, we had lorries coming past.
I mean, that's not ideal.
I think we were probably averaging, actually, I don't know the limits, but maybe 100 kilometers an hour, which it felt slow. Yeah, it felt, on the Autobahn, it felt slow, but that was all about managing the range. But, you know, it was fine. Was I impressed? Sure. Should I have been? No, not really.
The fact, why was you impressed?
Well, there you go. I mean, the fact that I was there going, oh, well done. Well done, the little electric car made it to the hotel. That shouldn't have been, I should have been like, yeah, of course.
But so would the petrol car, much faster.
Yeah, exactly. Much
so
faster.
Why are you impressed?
No, because of my negative stance towards EVs.
Right.
You're totally right. I agree with you. There shouldn't be a moment where I'm like impressed that the car has achieved its primary job.
Yeah, yeah.
But I sort of was. And it was nothing against the vehicle. And actually, there were a couple other journalists with me. And we discussed the fact that actually it is a shame because these products, the cars are getting better and better.
Of course
they
are,
yeah. It's just the infrastructure, which is just letting it down. But yeah. I wanted to mention that because, you know, we do talk about EVs in quite a negative way on this podcast.
The cars are getting better and better, to be honest. They are, and I have noticed that they are getting better. But, I mean, we've still got such a long way to go. Mm-hmm, we are still miles away.
Miles away, but it's going to be companies like Bugatti who are going to help maybe push this forward because, of course, they've now got this partnership, this ownership with Rimac.
Mm.
So a big future ahead for Bugatti, but I was there to definitely look at its current state and that being incredible combustion engines. Mm-hmm. And yes, the experience was, I think, everything that I, well, at least tried to showcase in the main video, an unbelievably unique experience in terms of visiting a car manufacturer. It was like nowhere else I've ever been.
Yeah.
McLaren's MTC, the McLaren Technology Center. Unbelievable, incredible, very impressive. Ferrari and Maranello, actually never quite as impressive as you would think, but all the history, all the heritage, all the Italian flair. Pagani actually is just a big unit on the back of an industrial estate. Koenigsegg I've never been to. What other impressive? Lamborghini. Lamborghini's quite nice, but again, it's just a big factory in the middle of nowhere. This is just like going to an incredibly exclusive, expensive chateau in France. That's what it is. It just happens to be owned by and run by Bugatti. And there's a little, they call it an atelier. They don't call it a factory or plant because Bugatti do things slightly differently. Essentially, they get all of the parts and components from all these different suppliers around the world. And then they put the cars together in Molsheim.
Mm.
So it's not a sort of production line going on.
No.
Still very impressive. And they had probably 5-6 cars on the go at any one time. A lot of cars that we weren't allowed to talk about, a lot of cars that we saw that we weren't allowed to photograph, some exciting new models and some customer cars that were coming out and things like that. So, yeah, it just felt expensive, mate.
Yeah.
Well, it felt VIP.
Yeah, well, it is.
Yeah, literally that. And that's why last week I was trying to sort of fly the Bugatti flag for you because you genuinely do not get that experience anywhere else. And you might come at me and go, oh, well, hold on a second. If you're a VVIP Ferrari, no. I genuinely don't believe any other manufacturer can give you the experience that Bugatti can give you in terms of a factory visit.
And that's good because they are asking more than anyone for a car. So the fact that they do it the best means they're doing it properly.
Absolutely. And then when you start to really understand how they create these cars, what goes into them, again, it basically it adds value to that price tag. Because you're right, they're extortionately expensive, but the entire brand and the product kind of justifies the price in my mind. The levels of detail, mate. Yeah, so, you know, we talk about panel gaps, you know, quite often when we're talking about cars, things like that, especially McLarens and even Ferraris or whatever.
Aston Martin.
Oh my God. They have a tool there, a little plastic trim tool, which is a millimeter measurement that the guy putting the car together has to go around every single panel gap and shut line and measure. And if the wedge doesn't just slide through those gaps, the car goes back. Has to be reworked on.
The Germans will do that, mate. The Germans will do that. Like, I would think the quality control at Porsche and stuff like that.
Porsche maybe, but we've just mentioned a whole load of brands that it sometimes falls
German
apart.
Brands, though.
Okay, fine. Yes, that's the VW Group influence,
yeah,
I'm sure.
I think so.
But it's also the levels of perfection that Bugatti are trying to achieve. You know, everything is over-analyzed, over-engineered, over-perfected, over-thought through. And you really get a sense of it. Mm. I'm not sitting here because I drank the Kool-Aid and had an amazing experience. It's just everything I hoped Bugatti would be coming to life in front of me and going, yes, this is why I see them as the ultimate luxury hypercar brand.
Fair enough.
So it was an amazing experience.
Very good.
Driving the car, very cool. Was it wholly different to the Chiron Sport I drove a couple of years ago? Potentially not.
Okay.
100 horsepower more. Slightly longer.
How you'd notice that difference, I do not know.
Well, between 1500 and 1600 horsepower, you're not really going to notice the difference. They have done some other changes, but yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, you know, in the way I experienced it, it wasn't night and day from the Chiron Sport.
Yeah.
But it was quite a short drive.
Was
it? Only thing I'd say. So if you drive a car from Bugatti, they always put somebody next to you. Now, I had Andy Wallace next to me. I mean, that's not a bad thing. This is the guy who set the world record or you know, the record at 304 miles an hour. He's an incredibly interesting guy, fascinating. But I don't know about you. I never really enjoy driving a car when somebody I don't really know is with me.
Well, yeah, I would agree, mate, because even if someone's with me full stop, I never drive as quickly if I've got someone in the passenger seat as if I do if I'm on my own. Because, like, if I make a mistake and I bin it and I really hurt myself or die and I'm on my own, that's my problem. If I done what I've just said with someone in the passenger seat and I lived and I was completely fine and the passenger died, I couldn't live with myself. So that's a big reason I'll never drive quite as fast.
You're right. Respect is a huge part of it, right?
Yeah.
Respect for your passenger, respect for the owner of the car, respect for the situation. And I'm so with you. I always want to be respectful, especially when I'm filming a car. And also, you've got to be respectful of other road users and viewers and everything that goes into making a YouTube video. But you're right. I think just inherently, you do drive faster by yourself. And therefore, me as a, if I'm trying to talk through the experience of a car, would I be better at doing that by myself? Probably. I think that's what I'm trying to
analyze. Like, I've been in cars with people before that I would never ever get back in a car with them. And I don't want anyone to get in the car with me and go, flipping hell, he's a lunatic. I'm never getting in
same.
The car with him.
Oh, like, of course.
So I'm always a bit reserved and a bit for
smooth
that
and easy.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the idiot getting in a Chiron Supersport and scaring the crap out of Andy Wallace. And being like, that guy can't drive. And don't let him get in the cars again.
Yeah.
Because hopefully he'll say, oh, he drove great. He drove very sensibly and he can drive a Bugatti anytime. Where if I'd gotten and act like a hooligan. And I say, I still had an incredible experience. And I'm so, like, doing what I do, I get to drive incredible cars. And I don't care if I'm driving them on a parking lot or on the best road in Europe. It doesn't matter. I drove a Chiron Supersport. I got an insight into what that car's like. But yes, looking back at it now, I basically, it comes down to, I want to spend more time in the cars. That's all it is. I just want to spend more time in the cars. Maybe I'm sounding a bit spoiled. No, I don't think I am.
No, you're not.
Just trying to analyze
the other big element as well. We are talking about the road as well. Mm-hmm, and it doesn't matter what car you're in. You can only go a certain speed on the road anyway.
Absolutely.
The problem is when you're in a fast car, sometimes it doesn't feel like you're going that fast when you actually really are going that fast. And sometimes your anticipation for speed, especially if you're not used to it and you're in a real fast car, that's when it catches you out. So if you get someone that say someone that drives an M4 every day, that probably drives it quite fast and they think they can drive and they drive briskly, whatever. And then you step into any supercar, it's another level. And that's what catches people out. And I think that people need to appreciate the machine and the car they're in. You have to respect it, because these cars in general now, mate, they're just too fast for the road. So that Chiron, regardless of what car you was in, that Chiron is just too fast for the road.
You're so right. And the best part was, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, at one point Andy was trying to talk through and illustrate traction, because obviously four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Incredible traction in the Chiron. That is the mind-boggling thing. You know, it just launches constantly.
Yeah.
And it very rarely breaks traction. And so at some point, was it before or after? I think it was before I got behind the wheel. He goes, look, we're going to do a first gear pull. I just want to show you what happens. And he does a... And then as he's launching down the road at God knows what speed, we hear a little tiny bump and the car goes, whoo. And he goes, so, okay, so there it did break a little bit of traction. I was like, okay, I'm not doing a first gear pull. Because I was like, oh my God, if you're the
first... because he hit a bump though, right?
Of course, no. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, you're right. It's the road and you've got to realise what you're in, and it's a lot. And you've got to build up to it. You've got to respect that performance. And it's just the factory test driver just sort of slightly scared himself a second ago. Oh, I wasn't expecting that. I was like, okay, I'll do a second gear pull.
But do you know when that happens? I know we're going slightly off topic. Do you know when you're driving a car, fast car, and you hit a bump? Yeah. Do you tense up?
Oh, yes.
Do you?
Well, no.
I don't.
I don't tense up physically. I tense up in the gut.
Do you?
Like, I definitely have those moments where things will happen, like a little squirm, a little flinch, whatever, and then I'm like, and then everything slows down.
Yeah,
do you know, I'll come off it a bit to have a moment. Yeah. Oh, I nearly died.
Yeah.
The worst one of that, when I got the 540C, the first ever road trip, I did the McLaren 540C. Was it the first ever road trip? Must have been with Paul. What was Paul driving? I have no idea. Well,
we went to
driving.
Scotland very quickly after you got that car.
Okay, so it must have been later than that.
Yeah.
I actually have no idea what trip this was, but Seb Delaney was in a Batmobile. James was in a 675 LT. Ah, yes. Paul was in his Huracan and I was in the 540C. We were going, not Route Napoleon, but one of those roads, hurtling towards this corner. I turned in and I came off the accelerator.
Oh no.
Big slide towards the barrier, like the whole car.
Went straight?
Well, yeah, like mid corner. So why did I come off the accelerator? And I was just sliding towards this barrier a bit. Got back on it, fucking fly down the road. And I thought, oh shit, I nearly just died.
But do you accelerate round a corner or do you wait?
Oh, it depends what I'm driving. Okay, but in that moment there, I came off the pedal midway through the corner.
So you unsettled the car?
Unsettled the car.
So you was on the accelerator halfway around the corner?
So I'm trying to think. I actually can't remember exactly
what happened.
I don't
really know what
you've done there. No, I've gone towards the corner. I've slowed down. I think the corner's been wider or tighter. I can't remember, mate.
You've got on
4 years ago. I've got on the power
and
come off again.
You're a better driver now than what you were 4 years ago, though.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
You know, you will, but you're like...
No, but also I just come out of an F-type into a 540C. Yeah, so it's all about understanding the physics and the dynamics, exactly. But that was a scary moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chiron experience, Bugatti experience, unbelievable. I pray and I hope I get an invite from them at some point. I made it very clear to them that I would love to drive their cars some more at some point in the future. They're like, oh yes, nice, thank you for coming.
Runway, go fly out.
No, I don't. I do want. I have absolutely zero interest in doing that. My
like
dream.
On the track.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it would be good. It definitely performed in corners way better than I was expecting. But my dream is to do a long distance road trip in that car. It's my absolute dream. I don't know where, I don't care when, but I don't want to do who cares about going
273 miles an hour on a motorway?
Oh, sorry, not a motorway, a runway. Great, well done you, like, cool.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it, take it somewhere.
Do something cool.
If anyone's got Chiron Sport, they'd like to lend Sam for a week or so.
Actually, I do know that one of our listeners does.
Really?
Hello! Hello, Mr. Jet Collector, who submitted his car for our Rate My Rides, which is coming next week. Does have a Chiron. So if you fancy doing a road trip or letting me do a road trip, get in touch. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on, because other things have been happening in the last week or so since I've been away and since we last caught up, including you getting a new Range Rover into stock.
Oh, I have. Yeah.
Hello. So yeah. Was that a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the crazy overs for new Range Rovers?
Yeah.
And now you've got one.
they are overs, yeah. And if I'm honest, my car is overs. It's not the bonkers money that they are. It's actually,
I've seen some going for 50 or 60k over.
No. They're not 50 or 60 grand over.
But I've seen people trying.
They're advertised for that, but they're not. I know a couple that have changed, few that have changed, and that are nowhere near that money.
Yeah.
And my car's nowhere near that money. I've priced it up.
Market value.
And a bit less, yeah, oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Done, well done you. You want to get rid of it, eh?
Yeah, I want to sell it. Yeah, yeah. There's no point. What's the point in putting it up at 50 or 60 grand over and still looking at it in 2 months? I mean, I want to sell the damn thing. So anyway, I've got this. It's coming.
Spec?
The bloke's flipped it. Because he's flipped it for a profit. I've given him a bit more money overs. I've not given him a lot, but I have. There's reasons behind it. I'm not interested in his reasons. If he wants to sell his own car, that's up to him. It's like a metallic blue.
Ooh, nice.
Like a dark metallic blue with like ebony ivory interior with dark wood. It's lovely, mate.
Classic Range Rover spec.
Yeah, with 22-inch dark black wheels, like gloss black wheels, black pack.
Engine?
It's the P400. So it's the petrol
hybrid.
It's the mild hybrid. It's the MHEV. So it's basically a 3 litre V6.
Right.
It's a Land Rover engine. Because a lot of the diesels, they're all BMW engines now. And the new SVR that's coming, that will be a BMW M5 engine. But the 3 litre car, the P400, and the P440 is a hybrid.
So is it P440E? Is that what they call it?
Correct.
It's a plug-in hybrid?
Yes.
Okay.
Mine's just a P400.
Fine. Okay. So a petrol car.
So it will appeal to a London audience. It's a proper bit of kit, mate.
I can imagine. So have you been fucking around with it in the weekend?
So not really. It come to me like with 200 miles on it.
Oh, okay.
I used it yesterday, so it might have, I don't know, I had to do a couple of journeys yesterday. I think it might have done 400 miles now or whatever, but that's it. It won't get used now until it's sold. So it's under 500 miles anyway.
Stepping in it though, can you see where they've improved it?
So it is 100% a level above in the cabin, in the car.
Interesting.
And actually, I can't think of a nicer car to plonk yourself in. Definitely that price range, for sure, it's a level above in terms of finish. The seats are loads more comfortable than the old car. They've really done well with the seats. It's a lovely place to be. It looks nicer outside with them sweeping lights and a few other little touches. But fundamentally, mate, it is still a Range Rover.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like literally last month, we sold the last of the old one. I was driving it for a while, remember?
I remember.
And that was a 300 diesel car. And to drive down the road, apart from you being in a nicer environment, and it is a lovely environment. It's got a big iPad touchscreen. It's all very modern. Everything works as well, by the way. I mean, maybe they have got this right, because I don't know what they've changed around the car, apart from the entertainment and the new screens and whatnot. Everything just seems to work completely fine. So fingers crossed, yeah. So it's very simple.
Is it quieter down the road?
Yeah, well,
because they made a big deal about this at the launch.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
So you could almost be an electric car, mate.
Wow.
It's like you can't hear it at all, which is perfect. It's really lovely to waft down the road in. But so was the old one.
Of course. So this is just, as it should have been, an improvement on an already fantastic product.
Yeah.
It's turning Range Rover up to 11 or maybe 12. It's sorting out all the old issues, which is crappy old tech and maybe outdated seats and all these different things to make it more refined, better to compete with things like Bentayga and Cullinan and stuff. And actually on that note, even though we're talking about Range Rovers at crazy overs and the fact that they are inherently more expensive than the old model, which they can get away with because of things like Cullinans and Bentaygas, would you argue, now you've spent some time with one, it's actually a bit of a bargain in that luxury SUV market?
So this is really weird what I'm about to say, right? I think that it's an absolute bargain when you're comparing it to a Bentayga in terms of, okay, dynamically, it's not going to be quite as good as a Bentayga. But again, we've had this conversation before.
Who cares in an SUV?
Exactly.
Who cares?
To drive down the road, it will be equally as good. It is another level inside in terms of tech and the way it looks. Maybe not quite finished, because Bentley are very good at finishing their cars. It's very German. But the Land Rover is beautifully finished. It is lovely. The steering wheel's nicer now. There's leather everywhere, and it's lovely leather as well. It's like got a really nice feel to it. I'm trying to explain it as well as I can for people that have not been in it. However, if you compare it to the old car, it's a bit too much money. But if you're comparing it to the competitor, so basically what I'm saying is, it's cheap if you're comparing it to competitor.
Yes.
If you're comparing it to an old car, it's too expensive.
But I think this is a sign of the times, to quote Harry Styles. I think it's just, you can't compare it to the old car because the world has moved on. The market is very different to when that old car came out.
Yeah.
There are so many of these things, RSQ8s and X5, no, X7, whatever's, you know, fancy, super high-end SUVs, Cayenne, Turbo GTs, all these different things, that Range Rover, if it came out and the car was 10 or 15 grand cheaper than it is, well, they would just be shooting themselves in the foot. They can get away with charging more. And actually, as we've just said, if you look at them in comparison to what else is on the market that does that super luxury high-end SUV, they are, I think, a bargain. I think it's a very attractive proposition.
Well, new, if you compare list, new price, not take the overs bit out of it at the moment, and that's an inflated market and that will settle down in a bit. The only problem is at the moment, as far as I know, the waiting list for a new Range Rover at the moment is about 2024, or it's the back end of next year. So this is why they're going for the money, or they're advertised for the money that they are, because you just can't get one. Yep. So, and they'll come in batches and then they'll go away again and everyone's ordered one. A few more will hit the market because people that are buying these cars, they think, well, I'll have the overs and I'll just wait, or I'll buy another car. You know what I mean? I'll just buy something else. The only problem with that at the moment is everything is expensive.
Everything's insane at the moment.
Everything is expensive. So if you go list for list, so if you go list for the old Range Rover and then list for the new one, I think there's about a 15 or 20 grand difference in price, roughly. Because you've got the overs, obviously it's more. However, the old one is not lost the money that it normally would, because values are strong. So inherently, say this car just come out and it was 110 grand or something, and the old model would have been 90, say. The old model, in normal circumstances, after a year or two, would be 50 or 60 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it ain't. It's still 80 or 90. So the old cars just moved from that. So the actual price difference, you just move barriers. So because the old ones held its money because you can't get them anymore, and the new one was going to be more money, the gap's actually fairly similar. It's just you're paying more money. So, and that's just what's happened with the market all around. So it's the way it is.
It's the way it is. I mean, it's the first time I've ever heard you argue to buying an older shaped car than a newer one, by the way. But I think my nervousness would be if you had a slot, you thought, oh, flip it and get the overs, and I was going to buy a 2019 Range Rover, why not? I think at some point they are going to tank those older cars.
You've made a mistake. The problem is they're going to tank together, because that's always what happens. When the new car comes down, the old car will have to come down, because that is just what happens, mate, in general. But the difference between the two yeah, the new car is over, but because the old car is still so strong, the gap is big, but it's not as big as you'd think it would be. But you can't have that new one and then get in the old one because you'd be disappointed.
I think you would.
It's next level.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping there's going to be a chance. I was supposed to be going tomorrow, but just diaries don't work out. Hopefully there's going to be a chance for me to get behind the wheel of one in the next few weeks or month or so. So yeah, stay tuned on the main channel. Hopefully some content on coming.
That it's so strange with Land Rover as well, because if they could get the damn things to work all the time. They are the best car on the road.
Oh, yours! You said yours has worked all the time.
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying is, they are going to have problems at some point because Land Rovers do. But what I'm trying to say is that they build a car, Land Rover, like no one else. There's no one that competes with that Range Rover in terms of price. There isn't another car that competes.
Bugatti Chiron. No, I'm joking. No,
but you know what I mean. It's like, yeah, it's a level above the German cars in terms of price, but it's more than a level above in terms of the way it makes you feel as well. And
okay, I'm going to pose a question to you then. I'm going to interrupt you and pose a question to you. Do you think Range Rover owners really care about the theoretical or proven reliability issues? Do you not think that their Range Rover brand is so strong and the loyalty to the Range Rover brand is so strong? Take my dad, for example. That those people are just buying Range Rover after Range Rover after Range Rover after Range Rover. And if they have niggles, it's just part of that experience. It's something that's on their radar. Then it's not enough to make them go, I'm fed up with this. I'm going to go get something else. Because even my dad had...
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Be stolen, let alone issues he had with other, you know, bits of tech and stuff like that. And to be fair, he never had any serious mechanical issues, my dad. He had tiny electrical gremlins, which you probably could have found on most other cars. So he was lucky. But he had three nicked because they're one of the most stolen cars in the UK. Mm. He still just kept going back. Mm. I think that's kind of the case, which is where Range Rover have been geniuses with this new car. They haven't reinvented the wheel.
Yeah.
It's an improvement. It's a product that will be familiar to their customers, like Harry Metcalf, who's been just buying them for donkey's years. Mm. They just keep going back. Do you not think it's one of the strongest brands in the world for that?
I would absolutely disagree with that because I've seen it with my own eyes. And I know customers that are always bought Range Rovers. They kept going wrong. And they now buy German cars.
Really?
Yeah.
They finally gave up? Or
no, because if you're fed up, mate, with them buying a 100 grand car or an 80 grand sport and you drive out the showroom and the bloody, all the lights go out and, and mate, honestly, some of the stories, engines blowing up and, you know, it's not acceptable in 2022. Yeah, you'll get stuff with just niggles and that, and they're fine. But historically, they have suffered with huge problems at all as well. So, yeah, you're right. You do get them loyal people that have always buy the brand. And I've always said, if you're going to pick one car that does everything all and you're not bothered, you just have a Range Rover Sport. You just have a Range Rover because it does everything. It's accepted everywhere. It just does everything. But, you know, they've just got this reliability problem and they have lost a huge amount of money over the last few years. Some of that is COVID, but
I think they just came out announcing some losses, haven't they? Huge. Which they've blamed on the chip shortage.
Yeah.
But you know what? Until we had met, and definitely until the last few years when we've been doing this podcast, I actually personally was never that aware of Range Rover issues. Mm. And, you know, my dad's had 4 or 5 over the last 10 or 15 years. Mm. My mum's now had, she's on her second or third Evoque. Mm. She just had a couple of things with the latest one, which is just more sort of time, but not a reliability thing. Like, so in my family, we've probably had close to 10 Land Rover products over the last 15, maybe even 20 years. Rock solid.
Yeah.
Rock solid. And so, you know, it was only through meeting you and talking to you and then I guess getting a little bit more exposure. But even still, you know, we talk about McLarens a lot. We talk about Ferraris sometimes going on, cars going up in flames, different things. But I very rarely get people coming up to me and regularly complaining or moaning about Range Rover issues, even though I know it's kind of a given. I know it's a thing, but it's... you have definitely informed me of that. So I don't know what that says about Range Rover customers. Maybe it's that I don't know many of them or like, do you know what I mean? Like, or they just get on with it or they give up and change their car.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's...
Yeah. I mean, you can be lucky, mate. Like you can get one and it's a bit like McLaren. Mm. If you get a good one.
Yeah, fair. Okay.
They're as good as gold. Yeah, yeah. So, but if you get a bad one, you're in trouble. And same with a Land Rover. If you get a bad one, you know, if you get a good one, they are as good as gold. Yeah, for sure. And the good thing about Land, you always get this with Land Rover when a new car comes out, maybe apart from the Velar, actually, that was a bit of an odd car. That was too expensive, that car, new. But like, I can go back 10 years when the new Range Rover Sport come out and there was a huge uptake for them as a year waiting list. And that was when production was running properly. And they were still overs, mate, 10 years ago. They were 10 or 15 grand over 10 years ago. So, all right, the new Range Rover now is whatever it is over, whatever people are paying for them. As a percentage, when you think that new Range Rover Sport back then was like 70 grand-ish in 2013, and they were trading for like 80, 85s, when you consider the percentage and the new one, like it's about the same. Like...
And we've got another new sport now, don't we? Just unveiled.
Which will be another. Mate, I remember as well when they first bring the Evoque out. Flipping hell. The attention for that
car.
But
this is what I mean, mate. Do you not think that the brand loyalty or the brand factor, it's a really, aspirational is maybe not the right word, but I just think it's got such strong brand power. That Range Rover badge, that more than Land Rover, that Range Rover stamp. I just think there's a cult following for it, despite issues, even to this day, you know, supply issues and delays and production queues and all this different stuff, people still just adore those products or that brand or the ideology of that brand.
Well, back then, when that new Sport come out and the Evoque come out and the new Vogue come out, they were smashing it, Land Rover, for about 4 or 5 years. They could do absolutely no wrong. And then they lost their way, and then they had the reliability problems. And then we get to 2020, and now there's a supply issue, and that's still ongoing now. So they had a couple of years, Land Rover, where they were struggling, and you could see that in their profits as well. Another thing with Land Rover... which is odd for a manufacturer. They have a huge pot of money. This just goes to show that even though they know they've got a problem, they have a huge pot of money set aside for buybacks and problematic cars. I mean, I don't really know any other manufacturer that does that, but Land Rover do have that in place. I don't know what happens at the end of the year when the money runs out, whether they keep topping it up. I don't know. But I know that they did have that in place because they knew they had a problem. And let's just hope with this new car that they fixed it, because like I just said earlier, that if I had to pick one car to drive every day, if it worked properly, it would be a Range Rover.
Potential is huge with this new one. So what are your thoughts on the new Sport? I thought it looked a bit Velar-like, styling-wise.
Yeah, I mean, they've got that look about them now. Mm. I mean, another really good thing about Land Rover is that, yeah, they've made them more rounded and you know, they all still look like Range Rovers, though, mate.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
And it's very clever the way they design it. And you know what I noticed the other day? And I noticed this with a lot of older model cars. You know, if a car gets older, it starts to look like its previous model. So in terms of the way it looks,
when something gets dated,
and you look back at the previous model before it, you can see more similarities. Yes.
Ah, that's a tough word for Monday morning.
It's a tough word for me.
Yeah.
So it's weird how that happens. Like when it first comes out, it's revolutionary and you think, flipping hell, what a car, like this miles better than the other one. But when you step back and then the new one comes out after that, and you look back at the old one, you think, actually, it's not that much different.
It's terrifying how quickly things age as well.
Yeah.
You know, when the minute there's a new car come out, you're like, oh my God, the old one looks crap now.
Mercedes are the worst. Yeah, Mercedes, I mean, they change their cars every 10 minutes.
Literally. And suddenly the old one suddenly looks completely out of date. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, the new sport we don't know so much about. Well, we do know a bit about, but no one's really got behind the wheel of it yet. But given the sort of positivity around new Range Rover, I'm excited for sport. Sport's always a bit more me because of size-wise. I think if I was in the market for a Range Rover, I'd be looking at sport instead of the big one. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the SVR, a bit more beefy version, some nice spec'd cars. So yeah, two Range Rovers that we can and should be excited about.
Yeah.
And, yeah, hopefully I'll get behind the wheel of soon enough.
Clarkson was right about... And I sort of agree with him. He said once that if you've got a sport and you have a Vogue pull up beside you, you're going to feel a bit inferior.
It's the ghost and the phantom theory as
and
well.
And I kind of agree with him, mate. Mm. Like the Range Rover Sport is like the Golf of hot hatches, the Volkswagen Golf of... There's millions and millions and millions and millions of them, you know? Like every man and his dog's going to want one and has one. You know, and we know this from the previous model. I mean, they are going to sell millions of them. But actually, for a way it makes you feel, and if you want to be a gentleman,
hello,
you have the Vogue.
Yeah, I think it's a different product.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, big Range Rover is exclusive elite luxury premium, best of the best. They called it the original influencer at the launch. Sport, you're right, firstly has more competition, it's less special, it's a pocket-sized version of that, so it makes it more accessible. That's the whole point, right? It's more affordable, makes it more accessible. You're getting a part of that Range Rover experience but not the full whack.
Yeah,
so that's why it's so popular, because not everyone can afford the full whack or wants the full whack. It's a bit RS4 to RS6. There's loads of examples along the line. Yeah, I still think Range Rover Sport is a hugely desirable product, but yeah, it doesn't give you the same thing that the big Range Rover does.
Mm.
But not everyone's after that. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. Not everyone is after the big Range Rover. My dad was never interested in the big Range Rover. For him, way too much, too big, too showy, not what he's after. The Sport was just perfect for him.
Fair enough.
So, you know, different markets, different cars. Anyway, let's move on from Range Rover.
Do you want a brown Defender?
Oh, I do. You got a brand Defender. No, you do not.
I have,
110 or 90?
110.
Not interested.
Oh.
What engine?
It's the D200.
Ah, not interested.
So it's the six-cylinder. Mate, it's much better than that four-pot, you know.
The only one I've been looking at, which would just be so stupid of me, is the P400. Because I think if I had a Defender with a bit more poke, I'm not going to go and buy a Defender. Who am I talking about? But I got bored at the weekend and, you know, obviously replacing the RS6, blah, blah, blah. I'm starting to, you know, bore myself with those decisions.
Are you selling the RS6?
Yeah, we've been talking about it for weeks.
Oh.
I said I got to get rid of it because I got these things coming. You know, everything's going on.
Well, no, yeah, no, but I'm just, I'm just
yeah,
trying
yeah,
to
no,
inform
no.
me.
I, you know, it's we're going to get there eventually. But okay, yeah, Defender, I think, you know, the pokier engines, I get that the... What did you say it was? D200?
Yeah, you got the D200 and the D300, I think. But I always thought that, and I drove it the other day, because we had a couple of really early ones and they were the 244 pot engines or the 254, whatever they were. But that D200 is fine. It's a six-cylinder.
Yeah.
And because it's got loads of torque.
Yeah,
it's sure it's good enough, mate. It's,
yeah, no, I mean, fine. They're so popular, those cars. I see them everywhere.
Yeah,
and I see a few people buying them, getting nice spec'd ones, and I always go, oh, so cool. But then I just remember, actually, it's crap to live with.
Now, the 110 is better than the 90.
Oh, of course. Has it got has it got air suspension? Yeah, they all got air suspension.
Yeah, it's got the steel wheels as well, which is cool.
Brown steel wheels.
Yeah.
I'd have it just to look at.
Yeah.
Well, talk about having things to look at. So this weekend, I've got a video going live, which I actually shot about a month and a half ago.
Am I in it?
Secret. You're not actually in it. But I went out to Morocco.
Oh, I know about this.
To get behind the wheel of, I don't really know how to sum it up. It's a creation from Nissan and Shell.
Uh-huh.
to celebrate a 1970s victory in the East African Safari Rally.
Right.
That Nissan / Datsun achieved with a 240Z, I think.
Yeah.
And they've created this kind of tribute car with a Nissan Juke.
Have they?
Mate, this thing is so cool. So it was revealed last year as a kind of like a, not a concept even, renders. They just did renders. Like, yeah. Oh, look, this would be cool, wouldn't it? Like, stuck some lights on it. Everyone was like, oh, that's the coolest thing ever. And they actually went and built it. They built it.
Do you remember when they done the Juke GTR? When they put the Nissan GTR? They do some crazy
they
stuff.
They do some cool stuff.
Yeah,
like,
they do, yeah.
Got to applaud it. And so Shell, I was there because of Shell, and Shell had been doing all the lubricants for it, so the oil and the fuel and things like that. All's explained in the video. But yeah, this really cool, quirky-looking Juke, proper adventure mobile, and they flew me out to Morocco to basically go exploring the Saharan Desert in this rally-specced Nissan. It was the coolest adventure of my life. I absolutely adored it. So much fun. So that video is going live on Sunday. Some stunning visuals. And as you say, like, just bravo Nissan.
Yeah,
they're just cool like that. Just doing these kind of wacky projects because, like, why not?
We can.
They had something to celebrate. We can. We've got the knowledge. We've got the expertise. We've got partners like Shell. Let's bish, bash, bosh. Create something cool.
When's that new 370Z coming out? The new...
The Z. They're just calling it the Z.
Oh, they're just calling it a Z.
Didn't we... Are we getting it here? What was the one that we're not getting here? Aren't we not getting it here?
Oh, that was the Corolla, wasn't it? No, the GR Corolla.
Are we getting the Z here?
Are we? Are we not? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't, because they don't sell many of them.
I thought we had this whole discussion and it's
Did
not
we?
Coming here.
Oh.
400 horsepower V6. And you just didn't care.
No, well, I don't care.
And you were like, oh, whatever.
No, because you'd... What, you'd
yeah, have, not for the UK.
Right, yeah, yeah. There's, well, there's a reason for that.
400 horsepower V6.
Good. Yeah, it's no good.
No, it'd be amazing, mate.
Yeah, no, it's no good. It's no good for this country.
So why are you asking about it then?
No, because I saw a clip the other day. I don't want one, for sure.
Sure.
But
I'm going to import one from Japan.
No, you're not. I don't tell lies.
No, I'm not, but anyway. So yeah, keep your eyes out on the main channel for that video, and then shortly after that will be my trip to Tenerife in the 360. Setting off on Thursday.
Can you imagine if you had any money? You'd be dangerous. You'd just been importing cars left, right,
and my God,
I'd
be nuts. If I was JWW and I had all the money in the world and a lot of support to do some crazy stuff, I'd be flying Chirons to Chile. I'd be importing the weirdest, wackiest Civics from Japan.
No, don't give him any ideas.
I'd be putting like V12s in Volvos and driving them around the Arctic Circle. Probably coming soon to a JWW channel. So yeah, James, if you ever need anyone to help spend some of that cash, or Tim. Tim's a bit too, he thinks it through a bit too much. I feel like I need someone who's got a bit of a wacky mind, you know, who I can encourage to do some crazy things with. Well, talking about crazy things, what about McLaren entering Formula E?
Oh, no, I missed that.
Did you miss that?
Well, yeah. I mean,
they've bought the Mercedes team. McLaren are going Formula E. Like, what is Zak Brown up to? What is that about?
I know why they're doing it.
Go on.
No, I know why they're doing it, because they're going to sell it.
So they want
building the brand up to sell it.
As possible.
Yeah. And this will all be tied in with the Audi. I bet you, mate.
I actually owe you a bit of an apology.
Yeah.
Because it's since come to light that old Stroll has been checking to Audi over at Aston Martin.
Okay.
After I completely ruined you and shut you down, said, never going to happen.
Yeah.
About a week later, an article came out that, for the Formula One team, which doesn't make a lot of sense, because obviously Mercedes part owned the road cars and put the engines in and all this stuff like that. Do they still put the engines in? Yeah, of course they do, for the Vantage, right?
Were Aston
ever going to do their own engines for the Vantage?
Why would they? Don't work.
Anyway, so now he's talking about getting Audi involved with the F1 team. I don't really get what's going on. It's all a bit of a mess.
He wants to sell it, mate.
But McLaren going, let's go Formula E racing in a series that we all think is probably going to be in the ground in a couple of years' time. It just felt, bizarre. But
just building their brand up.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. They're now in so many different motorsports. I guess that's cool. It's a great heritage, great brand. But Formula E is not interesting many people right now.
No.
Couple other little bits of car news before we wrap things up. V12 Vantage reviews came out. I didn't think they were that amazing.
Well, you messaging us in the group, and Paul Wallace was with me, unfortunately.
So it was a shame.
And he said, let's watch the video. Let's see what he's talking about the noise. And you're right. You said it was a dead noise, and it is.
I wasn't about the noise. The noise is just like the DBS. Like, yeah. It's not the old. It was more so I watched the Henry Catchpole Carfection video because he's the best.
Mm.
And I just thought Henry spent the first... three quarters of the video basically tearing the car apart.
Yeah.
But then trying to summarize it in a nice romantic way, saying that because it's got a V12 engine, you can forgive everything else because it's a V12, which I get. It's probably the same kind of thing that I would have said. But actually, I feel like most of the time he just said it's...
Let me have a go. I could tear it apart for the old video.
Let's not do that. I still kind of want to drive it just for like...
Do you want to buy one?
No.
No.
The money is a joke.
How much is it?
Mate, starts like 240.
Oh, no, I've lost.
I've had friends specking up over £300,000.
Are these people going to buy them?
No, I've had, well, one, I know one who's gone ahead, but most people have gone, no, thank you. Yeah, it's, oh, I don't know. I wasn't expecting any different, but I was hoping for a bit more. You just don't care, do you?
No.
You've got nothing to say about it, do you?
I've got nothing to say, mate.
Do you have anything to say about the Boxster Spider RS?
Yeah.
Go on.
It's coming.
Yes. Hence why I'm bringing it up. Thoughts?
No.
I agree.
Yeah.
I also don't think it can be called an RS.
Well, it's half of its roof's off.
Well, this is the thing, right? So I know that this generation, 718 generation, GT4, Boxer Spider, or 718 Spider, basically identical, except the roof. But... inherently, if Porsche are all about RS, track focus, but you know, it's only PDK because manual's not quickly enough. I think if they have this Spider, which is inherently going to have a lot of the RS bits on it,
yeah,
it should have a different name. It should be something else. I don't think you can have 718 Spider RS.
Yeah.
It's not going to have the big wing from what we've seen of the development shots. I mean...
mind you, you say no. I'm going to get you here.
Oh,
you say no. You love the GT3.
Yep.
You also love the Speedster.
Correct.
Which is basically a Spider version of a GT3.
Correct.
So why were you not like the GT4 RS?
Because it's not a Spider version of the GT3 RS.
What do you mean?
So what it's a Spider version of the GT3. What I'm saying is the RS moniker.
Right. Got
718
you.
Spider, 718 GT4. Totally.
Oh, so you got me back.
Yeah.
I didn't think that throw dry. Can I just tell you another thing as well?
Go on.
What's this... I don't know if we spoke about it. What's this silly ST thing that's coming out? This
911?
Yeah. Not interested.
Well, shut up. Yes, you are. You're not interested because you can't get one.
No, I'm not interested. Well,
why are you not interested? Go on.
Well, that's the only reason why I would.
What do you know about it?
I know it's a two-wheel drive turbo manual car.
No, that's the Sport Classic.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, the Sport Classic. Yeah, well, that's a collector's car.
Not interested.
Is this a collector's car, mate? Yeah. Well, yeah, it's
so no one's going to drive it, enjoy it, which is exactly why.
No, because look at every other sort of... because it's done by the heritage department, not the GT department.
Yeah, disaster.
It's not a disaster. It's cool that it's something more than just a livery, because in the past, that's what they've done.
Yeah.
You know, look at the old Sport Classic. It was a Carrera S, I think, not even a GTS, which has had some nice body parts on it.
Correct.
It was all about showcasing what was the kind of launch of, not paint to sample, but the... what did they call that? What was before paint to sample?
No idea. Can't
bespoke.
Remember.
Bespoke.
Bespoke.
Porsche bespoke. It's not the name. You're all over the place today.
No.
Anyway, the Sport Classic, it's cool that it is a variation of an engine and a car that we've already seen, but that you can't get anywhere else. So yes, right. Two-wheel drive, detuned, manual, turbo.
Cool. Crash.
No. Right amount. I mean, it's a lot of power. 550 or 500?
Too much power for a manual.
Oh, if you learn to drive, you could be all right. But
well, I can drive. I drove a Ferrari all right.
Can't drive manuals, mate.
I can drive manuals. Now, no, I'm going to tell you another thing.
Go on, because you've missed the big part, but anyway.
No, you go on, because I'm going to get you again. Go on.
I want to talk about the ST.
So do I.
Because that's something different.
Tell me.
Supposedly, still unconfirmed, but many Porsche aficionados have basically concluded that this is happening. We've got this big anniversary of the RS, right? The 73 RS. And supposedly we're going to be celebrating that with a launch at the end of this year for a production run next year.
Yeah.
Which is kind of going to be something 911R-ish or ST monikered. The thought is that ducktail has come in for the Sport Classic because it's then going to be run out for this ST, which is going to be, yes, a manual. It's a GT3 RS touring. So basically a 911R called the ST. That's what I've heard in Porsche aficionado.
GT3 R. So wait.
It's a 911R for today. So it's the GT3 RS manual without the wing.
Right. Well, that'll be a few quid as well.
Yes, and they'll make none of them.
Yeah.
I don't know how many original RSs there were. We can try and Google that, but it'll,
what
it'll
be those numbers. What are you talking about?
The Max Chilton car, the 73 RS.
Oh, well, he'll know. Oh, well, we can't get him though.
How many? Let's have a quick look. 200 lightweight, 17 RSHs. No, what is this?
They'll make 400 or 500.
How many Carrera? Oh, 1,590 examples. So I imagine that's how many they'll do of this ST thing. I say unconfirmed yet, but it's a famous moniker, the ST badge and name. And we've seen them do it before. The 911R is a prime example. We skipped a generation with the 911.2, didn't get that kind of iteration. But I think that's the route they're going to go, especially because there was some confusion. There was some talk of, oh, it's going to be a manual version of the Turbo S and it's going to be rear-wheel drive. But that's now turned out to be the Sport Classic.
Yeah.
So the ST, as I say, is likely to be a GT3 RS Touring.
Right.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Don't pretend like... Well,
stupid.
I'm car. Really not going to engage with you on this.
That's a stupid car, mate. A manual GT3 RS without any aero. I mean, in what life are you in? It's another collector's car, mate. It's like a 911R.
I'm sorry. For me, that would be the ultimate modern day 911.
Yeah, but you're deluded, mate.
I'm not deluded because if they tune it correctly, which they should, if they literally just bolt a manual gearbox and take the wing off, that does sound like a crash. But if it's developed for the road, which is supposedly what this will be,
yeah,
rather than the track, which is what the RS is all about,
yeah.
So slightly different suspension setup, correct gearing, etc. It will be the ultimate engine, the ultimate GT department engine,
yeah.
The probably arguably the best 911 chassis ever made, which you would attest to with the turbo.
Mm.
So one of the best chassis ever made for the 911. Great modern tech, all these different things. On the road, beautiful car, beautiful engine, manual gearbox for the drivers, people who want that involvement and that engagement and also to celebrate the history and the heritage.
Yeah.
That to me is like the ultimate Sunday road blaster. Just like 911 GT3 Touring, modern or the previous generation. It's not a car for you, mate.
But there is a difference.
We can repeat ourselves for another hour about how you don't like manuals and PDK's quicker and that's what the GT department says. That's what's great. Good on you. That's fine. Some of us prefer manuals. Some of us like manuals, like myself. And I think a manual GT3 RS, I think that's a very cool thing.
Which they're contradicting because you've already just said they're going to make it softer than a GT3 RS.
I don't know that. I've just made that up. I'm just saying.
Oh, you made it up.
I said.
No, thanks.
I would assume it will be set up for the road. Maybe it won't be. But it's not about driving on track, mate. It's not about
exactly
attacking
not.
The track. It's a road car.
Correct. But the GT3 RS... is a terrible road car. Terrible.
Well, there you go.
So they're going to make it even worse.
Hopefully they will address this by softening it off. It's a terrible road car because, well, suspension's way too firm.
Too strong.
And aero makes it slow in a straight line and also power delivery. So this would... I'm not going to go into this. I don't want to have this
You've
fight with you.
You've already said about the GT3 wait a minute. You've already said about the GT3, how bumpy and how tramliney that is. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine a GT3 RS manual with no aero while you're trying to change gear, it pulling you across the road? No, thank you.
I will take it. So Porsche, if you have any slots out there for your upcoming ST, don't worry about Tony. He can't afford it anyway. So you stick to your fake GT2 RS, mate. We'll draw a line there because I can already feel my blood pressure boiling. I don't want to sit here for another hour arguing about a car we don't even know for sure Porsche are going to make. We didn't even get into the Dakar. We can do that next week. Anyway, next week will be return of Rate My Rides or Rate Your Rides. Thank you for all of you who've already submitted. We're recording two episodes today because, yes, I'm off to Tenerife with the 360 later this week, which I cannot wait for. It's going to be a mad adventure.
Are you getting in there?
I'm driving down and then getting the ferry from the south of Spain across Tenerife. All to be revealed in a video coming soon to the main channel. And then I'm off to Canada. So yeah, so we're going to be apart for a few weeks. That's why we're doing double
episodes. Thank God for that.
Yeah, thank God for that. I already hate you enough after that Porsche chat. Also, thank you so much for all of you who've got tickets for Behind the Glass Live. There are just a handful of tickets remaining for that final date in October. So if you do want to get down to a Behind the Glass Live event, this year, go and check out that October date. Lots of you messaging saying, oh, can you not just squeeze out one or two more tickets? No, you missed your chance. You've got to be quick with these things. They're sold out, that's it. But hopefully we'll have out.
Wait for the next event.
There we go, that's exactly it. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And we'll be back with you very soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.